enough attention to asymptomatic or mild infections because they play a role in spreading the virus and can lead to long COVID.
NPR health correspondent Rob Stein. Thank you, Rob.
You bet.
The Pentagon is updating its policies on extremism within its ranks.
The issue is not a new one. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been pushing the Department of Defense to address the problem for nearly 40 years. But the participation of active and former service members in the January 6th attack on the Capitol provided a new urgency.
NPR's Adet Yusuf covers domestic extremism and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is and is not allowed under these revised policies?
Well, Scott, the keeping is that membership or affiliation with an extremist group actually is still allowed. Huh. What's not allowed is extremist activity or active participation in an extremist group. And the updated policy strives to be pretty comprehensive in what that includes, you know, such as paying membership dues or fees. One important addition to the policy, though, are some new rules around social media. Namely, that for the first time, service members are going to be held responsible for what they do on social media platforms.
But let's just spell out the way that the Pentagon is approaching this. You are saying that a service member could be a member of the Ku Klux Klan and not be disqualified from service.
That's right. And this gets at a balance that senior defense officials said that they were trying to strike with the updated policy. You know, they were saying, you know, they didn't want a police ideology. So that's why they're focusing instead on activity.
So how is the Pentagon defining activity then? That feels key.
Well, the policy lists some banned activities from advocating terrorism to supporting the overthrow of the U.S. government. The list actually even includes liking or reposting extremist views on social media. You know, the senior defense officials who briefed reporters yesterday said, you know, it's important to remember that service members have First Amendment rights, but to balance that against what they've called the corrosive effect of extremists within the ranks. But, you know, Scott, obviously this is controversial. Mm-hmm. Representative Anthony Brown, a Democratic congressman from Maryland and a retired Army colonel, has said that he believes that membership and not just activity should be enough to disqualify somebody from service.
What are extremism experts saying about these new rules?
Well, there were a few areas that I was hearing fell short. One person I spoke with is William Braniff. He's the director of the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism at the University of Maryland, and he himself is a retired Army officer. He noted that updates to the policy seem to prioritize identifying service members that may be engaged in extremist activity by strengthening something that's called the Insider Threat Program that the military's had for about a decade.
The question is, what next? Is it merely to identify them in order to remove them from military service, or is it to take a public health approach and try to address the vulnerabilities that that individual may have, try to increase their protective factors so that they become less vulnerable to violent extremism?
You know, I was also hearing concerns that this updated framework still mostly relies on people reporting instances of extremist activity that they've seen or become aware of instead of the department actively monitoring the issue. And also that there just isn't enough being done to inoculate service members who are retiring or transitioning out of the military and who are very high-value recruits for extremist groups.
Do we know how much of a scale this problem is within the military?
Well, the working group says up to 100 active military engaged in substantiated cases of prohibited extremist activity in the last year. And I'll note that's a tiny fraction of the 3.2 million active duty military and National Guard that the policy applies to, Scott.
That's NPR's Adet Yusuf. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Faith Jones talks about growing up in the cult group, the Children of God, also known as the Family, which was founded by her grandfather. He preached, God's message is love, and therefore men could practice polygamy and women needed to share their bodies with men in the group. Her memoir is called Sex Cult Nun. Join us.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the News Leaders Association, supporting the First Amendment and seeking to empower news leaders to build diverse, sustainable newsrooms to inform and engage the communities they reflect and serve. More at newsleaders.org. From Eric and Wendy Schmidt, through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working together to create a just world where all people have access to renewable energy, clean air and water, and healthy food. On the web at theschmidt.org. And from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Detrow.
I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We return this morning to the story of an American imprisoned in Iran. We've mentioned Imad Sharghi on this program before. Last April, we met his wife, Bahareh Sharghi, here in the U.S., in Washington, D.C., in the family's backyard.
His best times were under this cherry blossom tree, which, if you come back in 20 days, is in full bloom,
8 months have passed since that conversation. The other day, we talked with Bahareh Sharghi again, though this time we had to call instead of visit.
It would have been nice to go back and sit on your back porch again and see how the tree is doing, yeah. Although I imagine it's not in bloom anymore.
And not in bloom at all. All the leaves are gone. All the leaves are gone. Indeed, indeed. Winter is here.
Yeah. Which means it's also winter in Tehran, a city that spreads up a mountainside. On one of the higher slopes are the walls of Evin prison, behind which her husband is still being held.
He tells us he's doing well, but the hard part about it is that it's been over a year now and nobody has seen him. So, you know, it's hard to say how he's doing, but he tells us he's well, Steve.
Imad Sharghi is a native of Iran who moved to America, became a U.S. citizen and a businessman. A few years ago, he returned for a time with his wife to Tehran, but Iranian authorities imprisoned Imad on supposed suspicions of espionage. Though his wife was allowed to leave, he remains one of several U.S. citizens in Iranian custody. If there is evidence against them, it's never been shown in public. When we called Bahareh for an update, the main news was that he's been moved from solitary confinement into a shared cell. Sometimes he calls home, and she hears other men's voices or a distant TV.
But other than that, he's still in prison. He's an innocent man who's not being let out to be free. So prison is prison, is all I can say.
Needless to say, he can't tell you everything that he might want to tell you. But do you listen for little clues in his tone of voice or his choice of words to figure out how you think he's really doing?
No, Steve. I mean, after a year and a few weeks this time and, you know, 8 months the prior time that he was in, there's nothing really to listen for. If anything, he might say what's happening. And then still, we end up with everything is fine, the girls are fine, everybody's doing well.
I think you're telling me that life has come to a stop and there's very little to say until things change.
That's a way of putting it, Steve, definitely. I mean, we go on about our days, but in a sense, life has stopped 4 years ago for us. I mean, two graduations have happened, numerous birthdays have taken place, holidays have come and gone, and yet, you know, my eyes are still to the door. Yes, in a way, life has stopped for us as a family.
What, if anything, do you hear from the Iranian government?
Yeah, we hear nothing from the Iranian government at all.
Do you feel the U.S. government is doing what it can?
it's a hard question to answer in the sense that you know, Ahmad actually says he feels so lucky to be an American. He feels like his government is backing him up and supporting him and wants to bring him home. And yet for such a enormous government not to be able to bring a man, an innocent American, home. I trust that they are doing everything, and yet my husband is not home.
We're heading into the holidays, into the new year, when a lot of people have an opportunity, if they're lucky, to stop for a little while and see family and take stock. How do you... Goodness, I'm sorry. How do you intend to spend the end of the year?
It's difficult. It's been 4 years now that we haven't been together for any celebrations. And these are the times that, let's say around Thanksgiving or something, that I hear a crack in his voice. He's always putting on this, everything is fine, I am fine. But, you know, there are just emotions flow over at times. The sad emotions, I should say, flow over at times, like these especially. And in fact, because Christmas is very special for Ahmad and I, because the day before Christmas is also our wedding anniversary. Mm. So it will be 33 years. And it's hard.
Where were you when you got married 33 years ago?
We got married in San Francisco, actually. Mm.
What was that like?
I love this question. It brings a smile to my heart I haven't thought of that moment or that day for a long time. Thank you. It was wonderful. It was a glorious time, Steve. And the thing about it is that young love has evolved over time to something with such depth and roots. And I cannot imagine having a better friend in my life than Ahmad.
What would you want your fellow Americans to know about your experience?
When people say, I understand or I feel or something, I always say, I hope you never, ever have to feel anything close to this in your life. It's at times like this that you really realize what a touch means, what a hug means, Steve. When there's a man behind bars and walls. Enjoy moments together.
Bahare Sharghi, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Steve. As always, thank you very much. I can't wait until I come here with Ahmad to talk to you.
Oh, or I would love that.
Yes. Yes.
Bahare Sharghi's husband, Ahmad Sharghi, is one of several Americans held in Iran. This is NPR News.
As Western Kentucky recovers from tornadoes, one volunteer is doing his best to try and help communities by taking it all in.
I try to use open-ended questions and try to just shut my mouth. I got two ears. They don't need to hear anybody talking.
Listening and providing comfort this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Good morning. It's 5:29. Stay tuned to North Country Public Radio throughout the morning for the latest regional, national, and international news, plus updated weather forecasts for the North Country, and find us online at ncpr.org.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the Omicron variant of the coronavirus accounts for about 73% of new infections in the U.S. The CDC says Omicron is now the dominant variant nationwide, surpassing Delta. President Biden is expected to address Omicron, COVID-19, vaccines, and testing when he speaks this afternoon. New York's Governor Kathy Hochul says public schools in the state will remain open amid the spread of the Omicron variant.
We are keeping schools open because we're dealing with a very different variant at this time. We believe that it's critically important that our children not end up in that same situation they were for so many months when they were so displaced from their normal environment.
New York City is the nation's largest school district with more than 930,000 students. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the Senate will vote on President Biden's roughly $2 trillion domestic spending package sometime in the new year. Senate Democrats are expected to meet virtually tonight to reassess the way forward after Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia reaffirmed yesterday he won't support the president's proposal, in part because of the cost. Dow futures are up 210 points this morning following another day of sharp losses on Wall Street. This is NPR News. The Pentagon has issued new rules banning service members from actively engaging in extremist activities. Democratic Congressman Anthony Brown of Maryland says he'd like to see Congress strengthen that ban.
Congress has to make a really firm, definitive statement that membership in an extremist organization, with or without active participation, but membership, whether it's the KKK, whether it's a gang organization, or the Oath Keepers, is enough to disqualify you from participating in the military.
Brown was speaking to NPR's All Things Considered. Nike is reporting stronger sales and earnings in the latest quarter. NPR's Alina Selyuk has more.
In the latest quarter, Nike's revenue jumped 12% in its largest market, the U.S. and Canada. Nike's biggest challenge is demand that's outpacing supply. The company makes most of its shoes and about a third of its clothes in Vietnam, where factories have gone through waves of COVID-related shutdowns. Nike continues to cite this as the main reason why revenue declined in China, Asia Pacific, and Latin America. Still, Nike's CEO in a statement says the company is, quote, in a much more competitive position today than before the pandemic. Alina Selyuk, NPR News.
Dow futures are up 223 points this morning. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from American Jewish World Service, supporting human rights advocates worldwide as they respond to COVID-19 and defend democratic rights. Learn more at ajws.org. And from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working together to create a just world where all people have access to renewable energy, clean air and water, and healthy food. On the web at theschmidt.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Detrow in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. Jurors in the sex abuse trial of Ghislaine Maxwell will continue deliberations today after getting the case late yesterday. We want to note here that we're about to discuss details that will be dis-